Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the SAF-HOLLAND SE conference call. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode. The floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Claus Breitenbach.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and hello from Breitenbach. Thanks for joining the SAF-HOLLAND call today. Our CEO, Detlef Borkhardt, and CFO, Dr. Matthias Heiden, will present preliminary figures for the fiscal year 2018 and will also present our guidance for 2019. After the presentation, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. Please note that at this stage, questions will be for analysts and investors only. For the press, please contact the Investor Relations Department after today's call. I would like to hand now over to our CEO, Detlef Borkhardt.
Yeah, Mr. Breitenbach, thanks a lot for the introduction. Welcome to everybody also from my side. This is Detlef Borkhardt. Thanks for joining us early in the morning. Due to the limited time, I would like to jump into the agenda right away. On page number 2, you see the overview of the topics we are going to present today. We will start, or I will start, with a business summary for the financial year 2018. That will be followed by the preliminary key financial figures for 18 and especially for the last quarter 2018. We will talk about the market and the company outlook for 2019 for this year. As usually, the presentation will be divided in two parts. I will start, as I said, and then Dr. Matthias Heiden will take over the second part. Yeah, with this, please, I would like to draw your attention on page number 3 of our today's presentation with the headline of the business summary for 2018. On the first page, I would like to talk about our sales. And as you can see, we are above the guidance, the latest one we gave in October. On the first bullet point, you see that in 2018, our sales revenue rose by 14.2% year over year to 1.3 billion. This is, just to mention, by the way, our highest sales ever within the company. So we reach now the 1.3 billion level, and I'm pretty pleased with this development. The previous year, we did 1.138.9 billion in sales. Why is that? It's basically this customer demand, especially from the U.S. truck and trailer industry, plus our double-digit growth in the APEC China region and a very solid increase in the EMEA drove our sales up year over year and above our guidance in 2018. Our organic sales, we have seen a growth of 12.2%, and that topped the last adjustment we did in October. At that time, we said 9 to 10%, and also the original plan figure for our financial year 2018, where we said we will increase our sales by 4 to 5%. So overall, on the sales level, a very good year 2018. We also have seen significant negative FX effects of 48.4 million. That includes in sales mainly from Turkey and deviations from euro to the US dollar. The sales momentum in the last quarter 2018 continued in EMEA and Americas. In APEC China, it slowed down due to the ongoing trade dispute between US and China, as everybody know. Our overall sales rose 16.6% to 319.7 compared with the 274 million previous year. On the next page, page number 4, I would like to talk about the adjusted margin in 2018. As you can see, we reached an adjusted EBIT of 89.6 million euro compared with 91.2 in the previous year. As expected, our adjusted EBIT margin came in at 6.9, so almost 7%, and that was in line with our guidance where we said in October tending to the lower end of the 7 to 8% range. For your information, in the previous year, we did 8%, 8.0% adjusted EBIT margin. There are some explanations, and I would like to drive you through that on the next three bullet points. We had a negative impact from steel price increase. We informed you in the last year continuously about this development. In total, we have seen 11.3 million euro as a burden, and we had, due to the high demand from our OE customers, both in U.S. but also in Europe, especially in U.S., a very unfavorable product mix. That means a lot of standard products and no specialties with higher margin. And that is also always a big burden. We haven't been able to serve our aftermarket customers as we should because we shifted all the demand or most of the demand to our OE customers. The second bullet point is talking about the operational cost or additional operating cost in the last year, mainly from the U.S. plant consolidation. Also here we informed you frequently about the development. All that was fully accounted in our EBIT and summed up with 9.6 million euro now for the year 2018. We had some positive net gains of 7.3 million. That is because of a revaluation of our call and put options with the companies KLL and Orlandi, which we took over in 16 and last year. In KLL, we have a remaining stake of 42.5% and with an Orlandi 30%. And this revaluation then at the end was a net positive effect, as I said, of 7.3 million, which is not included in the adjusted EBIT. The reported EBIT, so therefore, came in now with 7.3% year over year to 78 million, and the previous year was 72.7 million. On page number five, I would like to talk about especially the results of the last quarter, Q4 in 2018. I would like to guide you through the five, six bullet points. The adjusted EBIT in Q4 was pretty much flat with 18.4 million or a margin of 5.8%. The restructuring cost came in with 3.7. Prior year was 1.7. That includes 1.1 million from the U.S. plant consolidation, including operations consulting and write-down of non-movable assets. Matthias will later on elaborate very much more in detail in this, so because I'm sure you will have some questions on that, and I'm interested, and you are interested in the development. In the Americas, let me talk a little bit also on this, at this point on this. The add-on operating costs continue to decline, as we already said last year, quarter over quarter, and are now well below the peak level in Q3 2017, is 6.3 million. Our EBIT, adjusted EBIT, rose to 2 million, whereas a loss of 3.9 a year ago. So you see already a big shift in the right direction, in the positive direction. And some other items, including volume, price, etc., all that offset both add-on operating costs and the steel price increase, which came in the last quarter with 1.1 million. The adjusted EBIT margin was up 580 basis points to 1.7%. Which is, and you see that in brackets as a comment, the highest percentage number in the financial year 2018. On EMEA, we saw a very solid performance. That was unfortunately offset by the weaker earnings from Americas and also in the last quarter 2018 by APEC, China. Also on this, we come to that in detail later on. We had, as we said already, the positive net gain regarding the revaluation, but I talked about it already on the last slide, on slide number four, so I'm not going to repeat that at that point of time. Yeah, let's jump right to page number seven, please, where we provide a bridge how to come in the sales in 2017 to the sales in 2018. As you can see, in 17 on the left-hand side, we did 1.138.9 million euros. Organically, we grew by almost 140 million. We had, as I said already a little bit earlier, 48.4 million negative FX effects and 70.9 million others, which is mainly the acquisitions we did and which most of them, especially Orlandi and York, came in from April and May 2018 onwards. So on the right-hand side, then you see the fantastic 1.3 billion in sales for the financial year 2018. On the next page, in page number 8, I would like to talk specifically Q4. Also here we provide a bridge. As you can see, in 2017, we did 274 million in sales. We could add then organically 24.6 million. We had FX effects for minus 3.3, and the acquisitions came in with 24.2 million, which sums up then to 319.7 million in Q4 2018. Then on the next page, page number 9, I would like to talk briefly about the trend in sales quarter over quarter compared 17 and 18. And as you can see in EMEA on the left-hand side, we saw in Q1 a 5.1%, then a very nice Q2 with 9.8% higher than Q2 2017, 7.7 and 6.8. So overall, very solid development, not that bullish in Americas and APAC China, but in EMEA, I'm very pleased with this development of having seen nice numbers, better numbers in 18 in every four quarters than in 17. In Americas, you can see in this development very nicely how much we have been able to follow our OE customers with their demand. 7.6% was the higher sales in Q1 18 compared with 17, and then you can see quarter over quarter and up to the Q4 last year, we have been able to increase 22.2%. So you can see quarter over quarter, month over month, we have been able to increase our output and to serve our customers better and better. On APEC China, also very interesting year, very stormy, very bullish in the first three quarters. Almost 50% Q1, almost 40% Q2, 66, an unbelievable high increase. But then, unfortunately, in Q4, you see a minus of 16%. We would like to explain that. The main reason is that some big customers, especially one in China, is doing trailer, which he exports in big volume to U.S., due to the tariff situation, the increased tariff situation, this business almost come to a stop. And we are a big supplier for this kind of trailers with axles, suspensions, landing gears, etc. And that was somehow unexpected. That hit us pretty hard. So therefore, we haven't been able to compensate that with other businesses with this short notice. So therefore, our sales dropped in Q4. This situation, that depends on the ongoing discussions between U.S. and China. We will see. We have started measures to compensate this lower business with these particular customers for this type of trailers, and I'm very confident that we'll see better numbers in this year, in 2019, in this regards. Yeah, with this, I would like to hand over to Matthias to talk more specifically about the numbers, the financial figures, and then at the end I will talk about our market and company outlook.
Yes, thank you, Detlef, and good morning also from my side. If we now start on page 10 to have a look at some selected P&L items, let's continue our transparent exchange with yourselves on the most pressing topic, which is the Americas region. And let's have a look at the adjusted EBIT bridge from Q4 of last year, from 2017, all the way over to Q4 of 2018. Please be reminded in this context that the fourth quarter of 2017 was the low point that is shown on the left, the minus 3.9 in absolute terms translated into a minus 4.1% margin for the region at the time. This has clearly improved over the year, as Detlef said, to a 1.7%, which is represented by an absolute adjusted EBIT number of 2 million in the fourth quarter of 2018. How did this happen? Well, we decreased our add-on operating costs. They're down to 1.4 million from 6.3. The delta is the 4.9 depicted in the slide. Please note that this is also lower than the add-on operating costs that we had in Q3. There we incurred 2.0 million, and now we're down to 1.4 in the fourth quarter. You also see these numbers again on the next slide. The steel price increase was lower. It is still a net negative impact in Q4, but the impact was lower for the company based majorly on two reasons. One is we started to pass on some of the price increases to our customers, but number two, steel price also moved a little bit sideways, so that the net negative impact was lower than in previous quarters. But also, I am positive about what you see depicted by the 2.1 million. Those are the management measures that we took, especially leveraging sales momentum in the region that gave us an additional contribution of 2.1 million. Here we're talking price increases towards the customers and benefiting from the volume in the region that Detlef already described. If we then move to page 11, this is the alternative visualization to what I just said, but it gives you the journey of the quarter-over-quarter successive improvements that we have reported to you about throughout 2018, and you see that the journey has continued. Now, you might say that the difference between Q4 and Q3 of 2018 is minute, because it's 1.7 compared to 1.6. Well, that is certainly true with regard to the slope of the curve, but let's remind each other of the fact that here in particular in the U.S. in the fourth quarter, we are seeing less working days, not only because of the Christmas holiday season, but also because of the Thanksgiving holiday season, which certainly does make a difference and always has also historically in our business. So the successive margin improvement has continued. If we now move up the global P&L away a little bit from the Americas region, how does all of this play out at gross profit level, which is the next slide, which starts with a look at Q4. This is the usual visualization with the qualitative directions on the right-hand side, and then some numbers towards the left-hand side of the slide. You see that gross profit margin declined year over year to 13.7% compared to a 16.9% in the previous year. If we were to exclude the total negative effects shown on the slide, the math works out slightly differently. It's 15.7% compared to a 19.8%. With that said, I want to move on to the full year perspective, and I will come back to the margin development in just a second, but I want to give you the full year perspective first. Here, again, same visualization. We see the negative impacts. You find the 11.3 total impact from the steel price. You find the sum of the additional operating costs that we incurred, the 9.6 throughout the year, and then restructuring costs on group level. What we then had or have to bear in mind when we compare the current level to the previous year's level is that in the fourth quarter of 2017, we had this one-time purchasing rebate in the EMEA region, plus 2018 is also burdened in the cost of sales line item. Further details to be disclosed when we publish our annual report round about 4 weeks from now. 2018 cost of sales have an additional burden from the Euro-Turkish lira currency pair, which is also not working in our favor, which certainly does explain a little bit more the movement downward in terms of the gross profit margin. Having said that, though, I want to send a clear message. While we cannot be happy and are not happy with our overall gross profit margin development in 2018 overall, whether they are caused by controllable factors or non-controllable factors, We're certainly confident to see this improve in 19 as we continue our journey towards operational excellence and as we're also faced with more favorable steel markets. In this context, because I just used the buzzword of operational excellence, please be reminded of two senior management appointments that we made recently, which certainly underline the journey towards operational excellence. That is the appointment of Alex Geis taking the additional responsibility as Chief Procurement Officer, so continuously focusing on global sourcing savings and sourcing process excellence, as well as the arrival of Andre Philipp as our new global COO. With that said, moving on to page 14 and staying on the full year perspective, the reconciliation of reported EBIT to adjusted EBIT for the full year, you see the delta between reported EBIT and adjusted EBIT amounts to 11.6 million. Where does that come from? Well, depreciation and amortization from the purchase price allocation here, please be reminded that there is a run rate effect slightly elevated in 18. The run rate effect is the normal depreciation of 8.8. And then we had the previously mentioned inventory step up from the York acquisition, which has a full year impact of 1.1 million. If you look ahead into 19, you can expect a run rate, a PPA run rate in this regard from around about 8 million. Restructuring and transaction costs were 9 million. And then we had what Detlef already mentioned in his introductory overview, the year-end revaluation of the call put options, which is an IFRS requirement for KLL and Orlandi. While you put them, just put them on the balance sheet with no impact on the P&L, when you first assess them or value them, you then subsequently need to go through the revaluation procedure. And here, given the market developments in Brazil, we had a write-off from or a correction of the liability. If I say write-off, that sounds negative, but it is a correction of the liability, which is in our favor. In other words, that actually means that the call option for us has become cheaper, while the positive element in Orlandi so had a slight pickup, which is below 1 million to the original movement on the P&L. First, details to be disclosed in the annual report in 4 weeks from now, where you find it in the notes. If we then move to page 15, the reconciliation at the fourth quarter level, basically I can repeat what I just said because the other income block stays the same. PPA here, the difference is 2.9. That's the slightly elevated depreciation, and then the inventory step up contributes with 0.4. If we round that up a little, and the 3.7, you find all the details on in the appendix. I'm certainly happy to take Q&A on that. What is important to me is spend another a minute on page 16. If we take a more holistic view of the company's business and thus the entire P&L from top to bottom, there are two things I want to highlight. That is, of course, the reported EBIT development with a plus 7.3% year-over-year improvement, now standing at 78 million euro, and then the EPS improvements, basic EPS improved by 11.6%, and the adjusted EPS by 2.6%. Where does the basic EPS improvement come from? Well, that's the much improved finance result, because we successfully repaid the corporate bond, number one. But as you will see in further disclosures, and we are still finalizing our own analysis on this, but the tax result for the year 2018 is also playing favorably here to a holistic overall improvement of EPS, which is good to see. And with that said, I can pass it back to Detlef, who will now comment on market outlook, how we see markets at this point, and make you familiar with our 2019 guidance.
Matthias, thanks. And as Matthias said, let's start with the market outlook first, because this is important for us, and then I will talk about the guidance for SAF Holland for 2019. So on page 18, you see the usual breakdown of the most important markets for us, EMEA and North America, divided in truck and trailer production. Let me start with EMEA first on the left-hand side of this slide. In 2018, we saw almost stable truck production on a very high level. We're talking about more than 587,000 heavy-duty trucks built in Europe, so a very nice number compared with the previous years. And the outlook for 2019 is even better. So according to LMC, they are talking about a plus 5% for 2019 on top of this already high production number for trucks. But as you know, the truck market in Europe is somehow important for us as an indicator by the terms of sales, revenue, and profitability. It is not that big because the sales we do with European truck OEMs is right around 3%, 3.5% of our total sales of the group. So therefore, plus 5 or minus 5% in the European truck market do not really influence our numbers heavily. But it's an indicator. On the trailer production in Europe, you see 2018, a nice 4% increase. With our increase in sales, I would say we beat the market and we gain additional market share, which is absolutely according to our strategy. For 2019, the outlook from Clear is minus 10%. What to say about this number in February 2019? It's a little bit too early. We don't have really clear indications how 2019 will run on the trailer side in Europe, but so far we are on track. That means, for example, talking about the order intake in January, it was a good month. We started the year really positive. And looking back the last couple of years, we did that as an exercise. We saw that the order intake in January was higher than the years 2014, 15, 16, and 17. Only 18 was an extremely high order intake in January, an all-time high for us. So I would not really take that as a good comparison. But all the other years have been lower than order intake now in 19. So what does it mean? That means for the next couple of weeks and months, we don't see any problems. And also when we talk to our customers, especially the small and mid-size trailer OEMs reporting full order books, they are running, 100% capacity utilization. Their lead times are 6-9 months for some products, like, for example, tankers and silos. The lead time is 1 year and above. Some of them already have confirm any orders for 2019 anymore. They are going to deliver the trailers in 2020. The big trailer OEMs, they are, a little bit more cautious, and they say we might see a lower order intake in trailer production in the second half of 2019, but this is only what we hear. Okay? Nobody knows it. Nobody has these orders now for the second half already in the books. But this is, expectations. These are expectations. So the minus 10%, again, I repeat myself, we don't see it so far. Of course, we will inform you continuously about the development. But even though if that will happen, and of course that will be could be a hit for us because we are one of the market leaders in Europe for trailer axles and suspensions. But as most of you know, we are very flexible in terms of production. We still have a lot of leased people on board, et cetera. So minus 10%, again, we will see if this will happen. I don't see it for now. And if so, we will react very fast and appropriate. Coming to North America, on the right-hand side, you see the truck production 2018. We saw a 27% increase, so an extremely high increase. And as you know, everybody was and still is struggling in the supply chain to fulfill this extremely high demand. And the outlook for 2019, according to FDR and ACT, is another plus 10%. And we see that also in our numbers, our plants, which do products for trucks like fifth wheels, like suspensions, couplings, etc. We are fully loaded. We are running 6, sometimes 7 days a week, 3 shifts. So we are really working, how to say, 100% on our capacity utilization, in some plants even higher. And the whole supply chain is still under stressed. But also here, we hear in the market expectations that the second half of 2019 will be weaker than the first half. Again, too early, as I said already about Europe, too early to report about that. We don't see that in our order intake. Also in North America, in US, our order intake in January was very good. So far, so good. On the trailer side, on the far right on this slide, you see 2018 at plus 11%. Also, this is a very nice increase, and we talk about absolute numbers of 360,000 trailers. So an extremely good year, better than all the years before, like 15, 16, and 17. And the outlook for 2019 is a minus 2%, which I would say is pretty much flat. If this is the case, if this will be the case, it would be another fantastic year in North America on trailer productions. But also, to drop some water into the wine, also here we hear from the market expectations about a weaker second half of 2019 compared to the first half. And also here I repeat myself now like a broken record. We don't see it so far. Our order intake is still very nice, very strong, and we are running under full steam. Here I would like to just to repeat for some of you who might not know, even though if the trailer production will slow down in North America, with our products and with the trend in the market towards disc brakes and a continuously trend towards disc brakes, we see even on our end, a nice improvement on our trailer axle production in Warrington for axles with disc brakes and also with air suspension, which are, I would call them, better products. I would call them, this is the higher end market, and this comes in then with a higher content per vehicle for us. So that means even if the numbers of trailers would go down, we sell more dollars per trailer as in the past because of the higher content of disc brakes and fully dressed axles, fully dressed systems. So I believe our strategy charm in now, and that will help tremendously if the market would go down. So with this, I would like to draw your attention on the last slide for today, slide number 19, with the outlook of SRF Holland. I would like to talk about financial targets for 2019 and our midterm planning 2020. Let me start with 19 first on the left-hand side. On sales, we see an increase of 4 to 5% compared with 2018, so 1.3 billion. Of course, and at this point of time, I believe it's important to mention that assumes stable FX rates and unchanged scope of consolidation, plus some potential further M&A activities, which is not part of the 4 to 5% increase in 19. On the profitability side, we see our adjusted EBIT margin around the midpoint of the 7 to 8% range. The net working capital ratio we see at 13%, so 1% point higher than the 12% from last year. This is mainly due to the fact that we will ramp up our production in our new, very big plant in China. For this, we need to produce some buffer and safety stocks in our facility in Xiamen to make sure that the ramp up of in Yangzhou, that's the place where the new production is going to be built now, that we can serve our customers during this phase. This is always a challenge. So we would like to be on the safe side and have a little bit more material on stock. Plus, we are going to serve our aftermarket distribution centers even better than in the past. That means we need to have parts available around the globe to make sure that our customers get spare parts within 24 hours. And that also needs some higher network capital. But with 13%, I believe we are still in a very good range. Our CapEx will come in this year between 68 to 70 million euros, far higher than in the past. That is mainly to a couple of reasons. One is increasing investments in our new China plant, as I just mentioned. This will be around the low two-digit euro million amount. Plus, we are going to build a new factory in India, in Pune, that is relating to our York acquisition, which we did in May or April, May last year. And we see that we need more capacity, which is a good problem to have. And for this, we are going to build a new plant right next door to the existing plant. That will, of course, cost some money. Plus, we do some investments in IT. We need to upgrade our infrastructure. This is mandatory. And we need to upgrade also our factories, for example, in the trailer production in North America. This is mainly we need to have higher automation. The labor problem is still there and increasing. Our turnover rate, and we are not alone here, in North America is extremely high. We're talking about 30 to 40% turnover. And the only solution for this, as we see, is higher automatization. And that means we need to invest in our facilities. And last but not least, also on our digitization, our smart steel initiatives need some CapEx. As you, most of you know, we invest heavily in autonomous driving, in electrification, in digitization, and that needs some investments up front. So all that leads to the 68 to 70 million in CapEx. Let me just go on with CapEx for 2020. Going to the right-hand side of this slide, you see there are 4 to 5% of sales. Most of you know in the past it was between 2 to 2.5%. So it is a higher number, but we see that as absolutely necessary to increase this CapEx ratio in terms of sales to not to lose our leading position in the product and the markets which we have. We need to continue that, and that needs to have some further investments. Let me go back to the top line on Strategy 2020. Organically, we see the 1.25 billion, and if you do the math, you see we are almost there. With 1.3 billion in sales, total sales last year. Some of that came in with acquisitions, of course, but the 1.25, you can take that as a given for 2020. On M&A, we said another 250 million, so we have still 1.5 years to go until end of 2020 to reach that. I'm not going to comment this more in detail right now, but we still have some targets on our radar screen, and we will see if we can do the 1.5 billion, but I'm pretty confident that if we don't do the 1.5, we will come very close. On the adjusted EBIT margin, we confirmed today again the 8%, at least 8% adjusted EBIT margin. And please allow me a comment here on this. I would say the year 2019, you could see as a transition year between 18 and 20, but the 8% is definitely our target. And again, I would like to confirm that we reach this level. And net working capital will stay stable with a 13% ratio. Yeah, with this, we are at the end of today's presentation, and I would like to hand back to Klaus.
So the floor is now open for your questions. Please go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9 and star on your telephone keypad. In case you wish to cancel your question, press 9 star again. Please press 9 star now to state your question. And the first question comes from Mr. Philippe Laurent, Berenberg. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Philippe Laurent from Berenberg. A couple of questions on my side. I would start first with North America, where Wabco actually guides for a more flattish truck production in the region because they see that the capacity utilization is already at highest levels and outputs probably cannot really expand further. And I wanted to ask you what you think about that, because you are mentioning something like an increase of 11% year-on-year in volumes, I think, for 2019. That's the first one.
Okay, let me try to answer that. Yeah, the numbers we provided today are the official numbers from FTR and SET, as usually. These are the available, which is probably the best guess. But as I said a couple of minutes ago, I would say it's a little bit too early to see really the final or to guide for the final numbers. Nobody really knows in the market. Doesn't matter if you talk to fleets or to OEMs. Everybody is still extremely busy and try to fulfill the orders. What will happen in the second half? As I said, and here I also would like to repeat, everybody is talking about a decrease, a lower second half than the first half, but nobody can tell me why. Nobody can tell me how much and when. So I would say let's follow the crowd. We are busy with ourselves, and as far as we see, our order intake is good or is on a high level. There's no reason to become nervous or whatever. WABCO is WABCO. We are SAF Holland, so their guidance is their guidance. I would say, again, in February, it's too early. I don't know. But also here, and also I would like to repeat myself, the same as in Europe, we are flexible. We work with a lot of lease personnel. We are flexible with our suppliers. So if we need to reduce our volume, if we need to cut shifts, whatever, we will do, and we will do it as usually very fast. And if the market would go down by whatever, 5, 10% or maybe even more, again, we don't see it so far. Okay, this is a usual development in the last probably 30, 40 years. This market, especially the North American market, is a volatile market in trucks and trailers. That's the business we are in, and again, we don't see it so far as a problem.
Okay, fair enough. That leads me actually to the second question. In your guidance for 4-5% year on your sales growth for 2019, you mentioned there is no FX so far. You mentioned that there is, I think, a bit of contribution from M&A, so perhaps you could give us a more precise indication how much we should expect from this M&A to be contributed into 2019, basically the spillover from 2018, if I understand that correctly. And secondly, if we then look at the organic growth, which you have in that range of 4-5%, how much would be coming really from volume by opposition to price? That would be, I guess, the question here, so we can understand a bit better how you position yourself in terms of your own expectation versus what the market forecasts are indicating so far.
Okay, let me start, and then I'm sure Matthias will chime in. I would say at this point of time we are not going to release this number so much in detail. Probably let's wait when we do the presentation of the final numbers for 2018. Then we can talk about this a little bit more in detail. But the acquisitions which we did so far, I don't really have this number in on hand now. How much this is then will be a contribution in 2019. We need to come back to that.
Okay, sorry.
You ask your follow-on, Philip, first, and then I can comment because then I can pick up your follow-on question. Please go ahead.
Well, I was just coming back to then the remaining part of the question. I mean, if we assume like 4-5% sales growth for 2019 and saying, okay, well, there will be perhaps a negligible contribution from this M&A. I mean, what's the dynamics in terms of the breakdown between the volume and the price component? Because I guess on the one hand, you still assume that there might be like a little bit of volume contribution. On the other side, if I get you correctly, via these what did you mention again? You basically raised the prices in the U.S. during Q4. For me, that looks like there is a net pricing which might be a bit positive. And perhaps you can give me an indication, if I think correctly, that in the sales guidance that you're providing, basically, we should expect finally the inflation that you've seen on the steel side during last year on the cost side to actually be reflected also on the revenues.
Okay, I just start. Okay, and then I'm sure Matthias again will comment on that as well. The majority of the 4 to 5%, okay, will come from growth in terms of more volume, okay, especially in markets like China. As I said, we will ramp up our production in the second half of the year, third quarter in Yangzhou, with much higher capacity, which we definitely needed, because we are running full steam in Xiamen, and we could do even more, but we are limited according to capacity. The same is with Warrington, with trailer axles and suspensions, as I already said. We could do much more. All of our customers are on allocation for more than 1.5 years now, and that continues. So everybody does not get what he wants from us. So we, as I said, we need more capacity. Therefore, we are going to invest in CapEx. So that means... And plus, this will go along with market share gains in all these markets, as I said, China, U.S., etc. But also part of it, but this is the lower part, the minor part, will be price increases for sure. As we already said, we are able to pass on the steel price increases to our customers, which we did in July last year and now also in January this year in the second step. And this will contribute to this as well. But the bigger part, to be very clear, comes from increased sales in markets with increasing market shares. Although the markets might go down, we are very confident with our product and with our strategy, with our service, we can gain further market share.
Well said, Detlef. The only piece I would like to add is a little bit of stats in the background. The 2018 M&A contribution was 70.8 million. Make that a rounded 71 million in revenue compared to the 1.3 billion overall. Those were the 2018 acquisitions. If you break that down, that is a rounded 51 for York and a rounded 20 for Orlandi. You see that the guidance format itself has changed from now on going forward, that we just focus on total sales volume with the rough qualitative assumptions that Detlef just outlined. But that's the way we would prefer to communicate going forward. Let me just underline that the number that we guide does not include 2019 M&A activities, should there be any.
Yeah, sure. I understood that as well. Okay, great. And then the last question would be directly also a consequence of the one I asked before. When we think about the adjusted EBIT margin that you plan to improve by basically 50, 60 bps year on year, I understand pricing is going to be probably net positive, steel volumes going up as well. What's the reason why the margin shouldn't be improving much more than that? Is it directly related to the fact that you are doing a bit more capex than you have done in the past, which is leading to higher depreciation and hence a headwind on the EBIT margin? Is that the right reasoning there?
No, it's not necessarily the right reason. I mean, that is certainly one way to look at it, Philippe. But to be perfectly honest, and this is what we worded in the release this morning, the improvements come slower than we anticipated them, and we need to bake that into the equation as well. It would be too simple to simply say, SAF Holland just passes on price increases, raises prices across the portfolio, and I'm speaking North America for the moment. We also need to see how we deal with the successive improvements, and there we have revised our assumptions as to how fast we recover in North America. In other words, the journey continues with the quarter-over-quarter improvement. That is what the budget looks like. But given that they come slower, the pickup in the first half of the year for the Americas region is slower than we originally anticipated, and that is why it takes a moment longer to come back towards the 8% during 19.
Okay, so it's fair to say that it's still a consequence of the reshuffling that you've done in the region and the fact that the market has been exploding in volume terms in between.
Yes, it is. And allow me just to add one more sentence so that this is understood by everybody. It is not that we do not have a plan or that we do not know what to do. We certainly do. But you have heard this from Detlef in previous quarterly calls before. The plans are so busy at 100% plus, to paint it a little bit black and white, capacity utilization, that there is only little room to run certain projects if we want to keep protecting our OE market share, which we successfully have done during 18. We have served our customers with the consequence that this has a margin impact, because the product mix changes towards the standard products and the service of the OEs. But this leaves a little less room than you sometimes might wish for in driving the improvements. And this plays into the equation as well, why this takes a moment longer, because the way we look at the market is that we see high capacity utilization, in particular in the first half of the year, because we also have a limited view of the year in February still. And that is important to bear in mind as you view our guidance and as you look at the successive improvements in North America.
Okay, so it's probably also fair to assume then that if volumes were to contract in production terms in trucks in the U.S., you would have more headroom then to actually finalize all these changes and all these improvements that you want to go through in the North American plants network.
That's a fine balancing act, of course, but your assumption is fair, Philippe.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Tim Schulz, Pareto Security. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi, and good morning also from my side. I have two questions, one relatively simple. Can you explain in a little bit more detail what is actually now worse than before in your expectation for 2019? So what has developed, let's say, in the wrong direction so that you're not thinking that you're making the 8%? That's my first question. And the second question, with regard to the revaluation of the put options, is it correct to assume that the business has gone weaker than expected, and this is the reason why the put option is now not so costly anymore, or is there a different reason? That would be my two questions.
Absolutely. I'll start with the second one to give Detlef a moment to prepare the first one, although we already touched on that. As for the valuation, the year-end valuation of the stock options, you described it perfectly well. It is the fact that the KLL call option for us is becoming cheaper because the business has not developed as positively, although I'm quick to add, it is picking up. We have seen a positive movement in 18 and are confident that we can continue in 19. Yet, that is not what the accounting standards are interested in. You take a multi-year planning perspective, and then you do a fair value calculation of your call option at year end. Given that the planning in quantitative terms has changed, the net present value or the fair value of the put option call option changes, and that is exactly what is happening. You then debit the liability, the potential one, and you credit the P&L in that regard. And we have corrected that in the adjusted EBIT, because this is, of course, a gain related to an M&A activity. And just as much as we adjust for the expenses, we also need to adjust for the gains, because otherwise that would not be symmetric. And as for the first question, Detlef, this was the question with regard to the 8% and what has changed.
Yeah, Mr. Schulz, thanks for your question. You said, what went wrong? I would say the only wrong thing here is, not the only, but the main wrong thing is timing. As Matthias already described, I believe, pretty well, is that we see that the measures, okay, which we have to do and I'm very sure, and we are very sure, we know exactly what we need to do to improve the numbers, especially in North America. And this is a big, big burden. Okay, all the other regions are on track, and if all the other regions will continue with their development as they did in the last 12, 24 months, or even the last 2 to 3 years, they will be part of the 8% plus in 2020. And also, of course, in 19. But in 19, North America, especially USA, is slower in their improvements as we expected last year. Okay, our assumption last year was end of 2018, early 2019, we are done. Okay, with all the activities, with all the optimization, especially in the plans, et cetera. But as Matthias said, we have been so busy with still increasing demand from our especially OE customers, plus a higher and higher pressure from the aftermarket customers who would like to get parts as well, that we are always behind. We gain something, higher productivity, lower cost, whatever it is, and then it was eaten up extremely fast by higher demand. So we are always behind here, and that continues month over month, quarter over quarter last year, and then for 19 we said, and we did a very precise budget for this year, as we usually do, and we said we need a little bit more time. Americas will not be back to the 9% adjusted EBIT margin as we did already in the past in 2019. Okay, it will take a little bit longer, and therefore we confirm the minimum 8% for 20, but as I said, 19 for us is a transition year, and that is mainly due to the development, a slower development in US.
Okay, if I could follow up on that, just to explain that a little bit in more detail. So is it fair to say that actually the market development was even stronger than you thought, so that the headwind against which you have to work was even more than you expected, or was it also operationally that you would have expected to improve quicker under the given circumstances?
Well, let's not, maybe I can add, it's Matthias again, to this. Let's not just blame it on the market and capacity utilization. That is certainly a big factor in the equation. But we are also very mindful of the work that we need to do to improve the production efficiency of the new network, of the supply chain management that we execute every single day. So let's not just take external factors as an explanation. There is a lot of internal work to do. It is just that the market development is in our favor on the top line, but not so much in our favor on the bottom line, if you allow me to use that picture, because number one, the product mix is unfavorable, and number two, the capacity utilization doesn't leave you the wiggle room and the time to make those improvements in the plants.
Okay, and that means also that if we would assume that demand in the U.S. would now go down from now on, which you're not expecting, but if that would happen, that would not necessarily lead to an immediate improvement in profitability, which would bring you back up to the levels where you used to be, but there is actually, it would give you the time to do your work, to improve efficiency, etc.
Let me rephrase that a little bit, Tim. It would help us to improve profitability further, but we wouldn't immediately jump to the levels that we were once at, but we certainly want to go back to those levels, but to implement those improvements takes a little bit longer, but a slowdown in the market would be helpful in this regard.
Okay, thank you.
And if I may add, sorry, and you will see, at least that's our plan, you will see a month over month, a quarter over quarter, further improvement of the numbers in North America, especially in the U.S. As you have seen already now in the last couple of quarters, step by step, it's hard work, okay, but step by step, and we will see definitely an improvement of quarter over quarter in 19 back to the, how to say, back to the good old times.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Frederick Bitter, Hauck & Aufhäuser. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning, all. I would have four questions. Can we do them one by one? Is that okay? The first one, thanks. The first one would be on EMEA, the margin decline we've seen in Q4, the 9% margin versus 13% in Q4 17. What were the reasons behind that?
I can take that. If you go back into the Q4 2017 presentation in particular, you see that the margin was particularly strong in EMEA. Also, if you look at the historical comparison, and this is the purchasing rebate, the one-time rebate that we were able to gain or to earn during the financial year 2017, given the size of SAF Holland by now and the globalization, which in turn meant during 17 that we have become a premium customer, if not the biggest global customer for certain suppliers. And there was this one-time purchasing rebate that fully supported the 2017 margin, if my memory serves me right, but please check, it was about above 4 million euro. So if you do the number crunching, then you see that has not particularly changed too much. In fact, now that I do the thinking, it was 4.5. So I think we had a solid quarter in Europe in Q4 18 again. Yet we did not have this one outstanding impact.
Yeah, no, I just checked it myself. It's absolutely correct. It's 4.5 million. Yeah. That's the positive material effect. Thank you. The second question I had was if you could provide a quantitative guidance on CapEx for 2020.
Do the math. Okay. Let's assume we do the 1.5 billion, okay, as we said. And then we said it will be around, what was the number? Okay. Thanks. Let me see here. Give me a second, please. Oh, that's not as many. Okay, again, take the 1.5 billion, okay, and we said in our presentation already that in 2020, okay, that's what you're asking about, it is the is it 68?
Somewhere around that.
Yeah, around this. Okay, take a number, roughly 68, plus minus.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Hopefully this, Frederick, let me just add, we took 4.5%, so the midpoint of 4 to 5.
Yeah.
Given that this is taken from our midterm planning assumptions, we chose the range 4 to 5 to indicate that we know that we will have a higher investment level than we've had over the past few years, but it is a little bit too early to say whether it is 4.0 or 4.7, given that these are projects of material size, and sometimes you need to adjust the planning for that. So we ask for your understanding that we take the pragmatic answer and say 4.5 against 1.5 billion in revenue assumption.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I mean, it wasn't clear to me if it's on what kind of sales number it is based, but effectively you're spending the same money in CapEx as you do in 19.
If I may add, please, Frederick, also it depends a little bit, are we able to spend this year to the 68 to 70 million, as we indicated, because the lead times of the supplier for equipment are still extremely long, okay? With the overall situation, the economic situation, it might go down because they will have less or lower orders. No order intake. So far, we don't see it. Lead times are still extremely long. Doesn't matter if it is for welding equipment, painting equipment, all the stuff we need in our operations. So are we really able to spend 68 to 70 million? I don't know yet. That's our plan, but we will see. So then it means we will have a spillover effect in 2020 if you're not able to spend this volume this year. We will see.
Yeah. Yeah, understood. Thank you very much. That's all very clear. The next question I had was on APAC. What's your assumption for market growth in 2019, if you could quantify that on the truck and trailer side, and also your margin expectations?
Yeah, we are not going to quantify that right now. That's also a little bit too early. But in China, we have a China and APEC, we have two different developments, okay? Both are going in the right direction, by the way. Both are going north. But in China, the market will decline, as we hear from customers and also what we see in some reports. Prediction is that for the Chinese truck market, it will be minus 10, minus 11, and for the Chinese trailer market, according to Clear, it will be minus 3. I believe it will be more. It will be probably minus 10, minus 15%. But this is the overall market. For us, we have a different development here. First of all, in trucks, we are not in. Okay, but for trailers, this is our trailers and buses. I have to talk about that as well. But mainly trailers, that's our big business. And here, the market development itself is not so important for us because we are not in the standards. Okay, we don't do low-cost products, which are a high share of the trailer market in China for the equipment. We are in the premium segment. And this premium segment continuously is growing since 2016-17 with the new regulations in place, and there are more new regulations to come. Just as two examples, one is that since January this year, this brake is mandatory for all trucks and trailers, especially trailers, this is important for us, who transport dangerous goods, and we are the market leader, global market leader in disc brakes for trailers, so this is very much in our favor. Because I believe we have the best products here, the best sourcing possibilities, and the best service for our customers. And from 1st of January next year on, all these trucks and trailers doing or transporting dangerous goods needs to have air suspension as well. And also here, I'm pretty confident that we are the number one or one of the market leaders globally. So both definitely, how to say, increase the numbers of premium trailers produced in China, and that will increase our market share as well because, as I said, we are in a very good position here. That is the main reason why we built the new plant, because we see that in the existing plant we are already full. Okay, we are running under 100 and whatever percent capacity utilization, and we need the new plant to have more capacity, and that will drive our market share development and also our sales number. How much? Okay, that's a little bit too early to report on that, but you can assume that in China we will grow high double-digit numbers also in 2019 and the next years to come. That's about China. In APEC, it's a little bit different development. As you know, we did the acquisition of York last year in April or May. Was it April or May?
April,
and Orlandi was May. Okay, I always...
No.
Just the other way around.
Signing
yeah,
inclusion is different, but York was the second one.
Yeah, so I always mix that. So we did in April, May, we did the acquisition of York, and we see the Indian trailer market, and that's where we're in. We are not in the Indian truck market. It's the fastest growing market globally, and the integration of York went very well so far. I'm very pleased with that. The problem here is that the Indian trailer market dropped significantly in November, December last year. This is due to a new regulation, but in China it was absolutely in our favor. In India is not the case because the Indian government released some new regulations on maximum weight, on axle load or load per axle, etc. I don't go into the details at this call, that will take too long, but the effect was that fleets stopped buying. Literally in India, and the market collapsed by, I would say, roughly 25% in November, December, and that will continue in the first, maybe second quarter this year as well. So we will still grow in India, but not that fast as we thought. But still, and I said that already, we will going to build a new factory in India because we believe in the market. This is a temporary slowdown. And the market will come back to the high levels and will grow even more. And with our new investment in the new facility, we will have more capacity available. The same situation than in China, and that will increase our market share gains as well. And that will increase top line and the profitability too.
Thank you very much for the clarification. The last one I had, and this is also relating, obviously, to APEC and your new plant in China. So I just wanted to hear your view on how you reassess the situation now, given that And obviously Q4 was also, in terms of your results, despite the expansion of the addressable market, et cetera, quite a drop from the high growth in Q4, in Q3, Q2, Q1, et cetera, last year. So how do you reassess the ramp up there, and then what kind of challenges you would expect?
Okay, we stick to our plan. Please have in mind that in our markets, you cannot really do business on a quarterly basis. Okay, you might not like to hear it, but that's a matter of fact. We don't drive and steer the company on quarterly results. If we see a drop in one quarter and then another high quarter the next year, next quarter, okay, we always see it due to the course over the year. So our plans are in place. We will not change anything. We might delay the groundbreaking activities in India for a couple of weeks or months, okay, 2 or 3 months, but that's the maximum. But we still definitely will start production of the new factory this year. That's the only small adjustments we do. In China, we change nothing, okay? We go our way, we go our path. We need this. We believe in all these developments, as I elaborated already. There is no change at all.
Absolutely. Thank you very much indeed.
And while the next people on the line get ready for their questions, allow me to take the opportunity, given that we touched on APEC China, and now I am still talking 2018 segment, allow me to make everybody on the call available of one typo that was contained on page 2 of the corporate news of the press release with regard to the fourth quarter margin 2017 in the APEC China region. In brackets, it says previous year 4.4%. During the late night checks, this went wrong. This should read 9.1% for the fourth quarter of 2017. Why the drop? Again, Detlef explained it. We did less business in the fourth quarter in APEC China. Plus, of course, we benefited in 2017 from the huge growth in the more profitable premium segment in China. So both are two sides of the same coin. But I just wanted to make sure that as you go through the release that you don't stumble across this. Q4 2017 margin for APEC China was 9.1%. Our sincere apologies for the mistake. Next question, please.
The next question comes from Alexander Wahl, MainFirst.
Yes, good morning, and thank you very much for taking my question. A quick one on your CapEx guidance. I just want to make sure that there is no misunderstanding on my part. How should I read your CapEx guidance of 4-5%? Do you guide for higher CapEx until 2020, or do you also guide for structurally higher CapEx beyond 2020? And if the latter is true, could you elaborate a little bit on where and why you step away from that asset-light business model you have run in the past?
Yeah. So for 2020 and later, we are not going to guide anything today. Just to let you know, we work on our strategy 2025 already in these days, quite heavily, quite intensive. And probably later this year, we are going already to talk about this. How much in detail we will see, that's we need to decide on that together with our board of directors. But in this strategy 2025, we also, of course, will then talk about CapEx and our requirement there, including R&D quota. Don't forget this. This is also some spending which we are working on, if this is the right level which we have. I would say in the past, with our 2-2.5%, that was probably too low. Okay. If we would had invest in the past something between 3-3.5%, just to take a number, we would not need that high investments now in 2018. Okay, we spent quite a lot, but 2019 will be a very high year with, as you said, 68-70 million. Continue to in 2020 and the following years, we will see. Again, I will not guide on that, but the 2-2.5% in our business, that's what we see also in comparison with our competitors, with other market players, the 2-2.5% are too low, especially given the challenges in the
all the projects, as I mentioned, electrification, digitization, etc., that needs additional spending.
Okay, thank you very much on that part. Second one, a follow-up on China. Could you just remind us how much business you do with customers that export to the U.S. and how much of your business there really goes to the domestic Chinese market?
Okay, we are not going to name these numbers, okay, because that goes too much into the details, and a lot of our competitors really would like to know this number. So we are not going to report on that. But let me say it's a double-digit million, okay, which is related to this. And well, this is important business for us so far. And as I said, we are now working on measures to compensate this. But on the long run, I believe this business will come back. Maybe even midterm, we will see. Again, it depends a little bit on the discussions between Mr. Trump and his Chinese colleagues, and then we will see.
Okay, fair point. And the final one, on the margin, I think we've talked excessively about that topic. My main takeaway is that as long as capacity utilization stays as high as it currently is in North America, the 8% or 8-9% margin is probably unattainable. So as you're more confident going into 2020 to reach the 8% adjusted margin, could you just... what kind of assumptions do you have for 2020? Even so, I understand if you don't want to come up with a concrete guidance, but just to understand it here, do you really forecast a market decline in 2020 in your margin assumption here?
As I said, maybe I start with the answer. If the market will decline, we will react. That's what we do for generations, okay? That is in our DNA. We know how to adjust our costs according to a market development. We are always a little bit too slow if the markets are booming, okay? That is because we are a little bit, more on the safe side regarding building capacity, because if you have idle capacity in markets or in years where the market is not so high, then that costs money. So therefore, we are always a little bit on the safe side here, and that means we are always a little bit too slow, but I believe that is the right approach. But if the markets will go down, and again, we have seen that now, I don't know for how many dozens of times in the last 20, 30 years, we will adjust our cost accordingly, and our profitability will be burdened by that, of course, but not that much. And don't forget, please, we have a very high aftermarket share, which is a very stable factor in our profitability. More than 50% of our overall profitability from the group comes from the aftermarket. And so far in the U.S., and you know that, for the last 18 months, we do not serve the aftermarket as we should. Okay, so therefore, the overall market development, if it will go down to whatever number, we will improve our profitability in U.S. I'm very confident about that.
And if I may add and just enhance the focus a little, widen the focus just a little bit, what is the theme on our journey between now and 2020? It's profitable growth, or growth in profitability, because that's what we clearly communicated this morning. And this also includes measures and initiatives outside of the United States, because profitability management is part of the focus activities and the top priority of the company. And to give you just one example, if you look at the York integration and York PMI activities, we are ahead of the curve. The York group gave us an above group margin in Q4, which was very positive to see, and we will continue that journey. And there is still a lot to gain for SAF Holland Group through process efficiencies, through sourcing savings, and things like that. So I think there clearly is a path, which is what we're trying to say, between what we publish today for actual 2018 and how we get to a minimum margin of 8% in 2020. Of course, the bulk of that is the solving of the challenges in the United States, but let's not lose sight of the fact that we're a dynamically growing and globalizing group of companies.
Yeah, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9 and star now. The next question comes from Nikolai Kempf, Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, hi, Nikolai Kempf speaking from Deutsche Bank. So you've touched extensively on both North America and APEC. Just one quick question on EMEA. So I assume that the higher labor costs are sticky for 2019 and 2020. How are you trying to offset those in the coming years?
Yeah, maybe I can. Good morning, first of all. Thanks for the question. Maybe I can start with that. They are sticky because they are or manifested themselves in the tariff agreement that the two sides struck, which we're bound to. That is the first part of the answer. The other piece is we've always had a policy through which we have a little bit room to breathe in the way we structure the workforce that gives us flexibility with regard to temporary workers. That is one measure. And then, of course, we closely monitor the workforce versus the production planning and order intake. That actually happens on a weekly basis where we align this. So there is managerial wiggle room to address this, and I think the rest will need to come over time as we have more clarity about the way forward in terms of the demand in the European market, which for us particularly means Germany in terms of the production workforce in particular.
And if I may add, there are three additional points. One of the reasons for our higher CapEx is also higher automatization here in Europe in our German plants. These two factories here, which we run in our around our headquarters, are the state of the art. I believe this is a benchmark in the global trailer axle production. But already we are, I believe, quite good on producing on a very high level. Automatization will come even more. We're talking about implementation of MES systems, et cetera, et cetera. So you can call it Industry 4.0, if you like. So digitization is part of it, higher automatization, higher output, and that means less people. That is one thing. And the other thing is you run a factory in Turkey, as you know. We opened that in March 2017. Yeah, March 2017. We are very pleased with this factory. It makes money. Workforce is very stable, high quality, and really high output. So that means if the situation will get worse here in Germany, according to labor rates, whatever, we have other possibilities. Okay, so the only problem is with the Turkish plant, it's too far away from our customers here in Germany and in the North Europe, so transport costs are very high. But for customers in South Europe and also in the Middle East, which we still serve partly here from Germany, from the German plants, we could serve from Turkey as well. So we have some way to maneuver, and I would say so far we have been able in the last 15 years to compensate all salary increases for both blue and white collar people. You see the profitability growing, especially in the last 2-3 years in Europe, dramatically. And that was, although we have seen every year 4-5% salary increases here in Germany. So far, I would say the track record is very positive on this.
Yeah, very clear. Thanks.
There are no further questions.
Thanks a lot for taking the time today to attend the conference call. If you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to contact the Investor Relations Department. We wish everyone a nice day. Take care and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.